Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast, the podcast companion for digitallydownloaded.net. I'm Matthew Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of Digitally Downloaded. And with me this week, we have Alan, as usual.
Hello.
Matt from New Zealand.
Hello.
And we have a special guest this week. We have Brendan from Blue Volcano, Aussie indie developer.
Hello, all.
Great to have you on board this week, Brendan.
Thank you. Thank you. Look forward to it.
Yeah, looking forward to chatting about your games and stuff. But first, we're going to have a bit of music, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Sony. Senbon Sakura by Hatsune Miku. A little bit of history about that song. It was originally a cover, actually. Somebody got Miku to sing it, and then it became so crazy popular that now everybody's covering that version of it. So, very good song. And Hatsune Miku's great. Okay, so let's talk about Sony. Sony had a, I guess you could say, controversial 2016 between the release of No Man's Sky and the up and down response that people have had to The Last Guardian, which is not to be unexpected, but a little bit disappointing, I guess, from Sony's point of view. But I think the thing we pretty much can all agree is that 2017 is looking pretty damn good from Sony. Recently, they had their experience show and showed off basically everything that we'll be playing from them in the next year. And there was a lot of really good stuff. So, I mean, Alan, you've been watching it, or you've watched the show as well. What was your response to what went on?
I feel like the best sort of thing to come out of that show is this sort of renewed interest in PS1 games and early PS3 games. I'm not really sure where it's come from, because everyone seemed to stop caring about those games for the longest while. But I guess seeing the Crash Bandicoot sort of re-release as an actual tangible product now, it's a bit... It's reassuring, but also I'm really, really interested to see how that goes, because I'm not sure how well it'll hold up compared to, you know, the past expectations of what we thought the game was. You know, just that sort of strange callback, I guess, that I'm not really sure is going to work, but I really appreciate it. It's there in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Crash Bandicoot plays like, I don't want to swear, it plays terribly now. Like, it's just not a good game. People have these really fond memories of it being, you know, one of the great games of the PlayStation era. And, you know, people obviously love the game, and that's great. But I think this is going to be one of those victims of nostalgia, where as soon as people play the game now, they're going to realize it just has not aged very well at all. Like many of the, you know, 3D platformers or action games that came out on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah, hopefully they will, and remaking it, as it looks like a complete remake rather than a remaster, but hopefully they'll be able to fix some of those issues. But my Crash Bandicoot 3 was my first experience to those games originally, and I didn't play the first one until, oh, it must have been about 5 years ago or so when it came out on, got re-released on PlayStation 3, and it was... just, I've never been able to finish it just because of how poorly designed it is, especially in terms of like checkpoints and the save system.
Yes. Oh, God.
You can only save every couple of levels, and only if you find the hidden area that has the save point in it.
Yeah, yeah, I mean...
I assume they'll have got rid of that in the new version, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure I'm sure they will improve the experience. But I don't know. I wonder if they can improve it that much before people will start to be disappointed that it's not marrying up with their memories of the game, if that makes sense. You know, it's a fine line they're going to have to walk with it, because it's such a well-loved franchise that's so old now that people are going to have distorted opinions about, or distorted memories about, what the game was.
So I've actually been replaying the original ones on the PS3 with my sister recently, because it's the first game that we ever really played together, because I was like 3. I was pretty young. So we've been playing, we played one for about 2 hours, got to maybe 8th or 9th level and just couldn't beat anything anymore, because we had no lives and no sort of way of actually continuing the game without just breaking the PlayStation and walking away. It is one of the most frustrating things in the world, but I still love it so much, even though I know it's terrible. And then going to Crash Bandicoot 2, which is our, you know, I'm going to say it's a better game pretty much every way, but we didn't play it at all. And just playing that and seeing like, okay, this is how they improved everything. This is awesome. This is like the best way they could have taken this franchise. But I'm not sure that that'll translate too well into a full trilogy remaster when you're expected to play the first one all the way through, and then, you know, to go to the second one and go to the third one. It seems like they're really, really taking a gamble on the idea of, I guess, serializing the game. And I don't think it's really worth it. Honestly, they could have just released 2 as a full product and then, you know, elaborated on it, changed some things up, made it into like a Resident Evil remake sort of thing, which I would have loved. It's pre-rented Crash Bandicoot, I'm not even kidding, would be really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, one of the things I really liked about the Uncharted 4 was just when they were sitting down and Nathan was playing Crash Bandicoot and taking the piss out of it. So,
oh, it was great. That was wonderful. That was like the best part of that game, to be entirely honest with you.
I completely agree. It was otherwise a fairly dull game as far as I'm concerned, but that section was pretty cool. So that's the kind of thing that Sony Activision, whoever's actually, you know, looking after this game, is going to have to be up against in terms of modernizing Crash Bandicoot. There is a lot of fun that you can poke at the original games now, and they obviously won't want people to be doing that. Anyway, let's stop talking about Crash Bandicoot. There's a lot of other stuff that Sony got announced. Brendan, was there anything
Crash Bandicoot?
Brendan, was there anything from the experience that kind of stood out for you? Or what Sony's got planned for next year anyway?
Okay, so I guess a bit like with the Crash Bandicoot, most of the interest is in some older games, some re-releases. So Wipeout being one of my favourite games of all time. And after hearing that announcement, I was like very excited. And I couldn't believe it was 2008 that the last Wipeout came out. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago. And when you look at Wipeout Fury, it still looks pretty good still, but just having the ability to play that now on the PlayStation 4, and hopefully they up the resolution to 4K and do all these other whiz bang effects, I think I'm really looking forward to that. Garou, Mark of the Wolves, like a really good fighting game from the old era. So I'm a massive fighting game fan, so that I think was a forgotten masterpiece that sort of will hopefully get a little second wind and maybe have SNK now, you know, with the success. Was it successful, King of Fighters 14? I know it was critically, you know, praised.
It's done better than most KOF. It's done better than most KOF games, I feel, just because it's had more sort of, I guess, like camera time, especially because it was nominated for the Game Awards thing. Like, people would probably know it.
Yeah. So, so I'm looking forward to those. Of course, being that fighting game fan, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, I'm looking at it in two ways. I'm a massive Marvel fan. I've been, you know, collecting those comic books since I was, as long as I can remember. So whenever I see these licenses getting used in games, I'm always a bit skeptical about those characters, and the fact that the rumors going around that they're not going to use the X-Men characters or any of the ones that Fox sort of own the rights to is a bit of a you know, I hope that's just a rumor and it doesn't come true, but we shall see.
Yeah, I think it's the best thing that could have happened to that game, though, because anything without Berserker Barrage is probably the best game in the world. I refuse to allow any game that has Berserker Barrage. All that dirty bounce kick that you can do. I just refuse to allow Wolverine in any video game ever again, just because he was in every team. In every single team. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing on that is I think he would probably be one of the only X-Men characters that would make that transition, because that'd be shorter. So maybe we won't see you online in that one.
I'm ecstatic.
What about some of the kind of the big stuff that Sony's got in the works? I mean, you know, Death Stranding's not going to happen in 2017 because it's like, you know, Kojima game, so probably won't come out to about 2062.
Hooray. Game of the year every year until then.
But I mean, there's other stuff that obviously will come out next year. There's
Persona 5,
Horizon, which looks, I don't know. I was so keen on that game at first, but the more I see of it, the more and more I kind of lose interest in it, I guess. But it's obviously going to be a pretty big game. And what else has Sony got in on the big end of town coming next? Oh, Uncharted with female characters, which is cool. Finally, about time.
That surprises absolutely no one.
I think that was oddly one of my favourite announcements from PlayStation Experience, especially after how much I disliked Uncharted 4. And well, one of the main reasons I disliked Uncharted 4 was because they completely erased my favorite character, which is Chloe. Chloe. So now she gets her own spin-off that she's the center of. So I'm quite excited about that. A little bit cautiously excited just because, again, the direction that Uncharted 4 went in terms of doing, in my opinion, a really bad job of trying to get more serious. So I hope that the new game can find a bit more of the fun that the original trilogy had.
Yeah, I still haven't finished Uncharted 4. I tried to go back and finish it, and just, like, it's beautiful and it's well made, but I just don't know. I don't feel like it's the sort of follow-up I wanted from 3, and definitely not from 2. It really comes down to, I think, how they sort of treated the Uncharted series as this would be the last game, and it didn't really need to be because they have so many opportunities with side stories. Like, they could do an entire thing with Chloe, with Cutter, with, like, the entire British crew, who are, let's be honest, the better part of Uncharted. And yeah, it tried to be Crystal Skull, but good, and it was good, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't lighthearted enough. There needed to be a bit more, like, you know, I guess banter, and because there was only ever two characters in the game, you know, at any one time you'd either be working with Sully or you'd be working with Elena, or his spoiler brother. It just felt like, it felt like it was trying to go for this very, very serious tone, when what I liked about Uncharted was running around with, you know, Cutter, with Sully, and with, you know, Elena or Chloe, and just, you know, hearing them, you know, shit talk each other. And that was one of the most fun things about the game, because you could be climbing and it would suddenly go into this huge, like, little miniature argument, and it would be wonderful, and you'd sort of laugh a little bit and have a good time. And Uncharted 4 kind of missed out on that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of sequels that didn't need to happen.
Yes. Yes, I know exactly where you're going.
As controversial as that is to say, to me, the announcement of The Last of Us 2 was probably the only real disappointment from the Sony show, because it was basically like announcing that, hey, look, we're writing a sequel to The Road, or, you know, some other piece of classic literature that was actually complete and didn't need a sequel. In fact, I remember maybe a year ago or so, I was in a bookstore and some idiot had written a sequel to Dracula, and that's just dumb and didn't need to happen. And I think The Last of Us 2, I'm sure it'll be a great game and all that kind of nonsense, but to me, The Last of Us was good because it was complete package. Like, the game had a sense of finality, and it was it resolved what it needed to say. So to go and announce a sequel just seems like a video game thing to do.
Yeah, also, it's a game about hate, Matt. It's a game about hate.
That's never happened before in games, ever.
Well, I might go against you here and say that I am excited for The Last of Us 2, in hoping that it becomes its own self-contained story, I guess, and another story within this Last of Us universe. So I think what they've built so far was such a rich and engaging environment. Like, the first one was that masterpiece that I think they possibly were like, it's going to cost a lot of money to create a whole new game in this genre, and people already know that The Last of Us name. So probably hedging their bets a bit in terms of, this game will already have an audience. It's just, let's hope that they don't undo any of the good stuff from the first one and go, you know, and change story or anything like that. Let's hope they just create a whole new story and a self-contained title within the Last of Us universe that could stand on its own rather than being a direct sequel to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's always hope that it would go that way, yeah.
I'm one of the people who actually didn't really like The Last of Us 1 because I just couldn't get over the controls and I didn't enjoy it, so I didn't play it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not a fan of Naughty Dog's way of handling shooting and movement and stuff like that, so I'm not I'm optimistic that I'll watch a Let's Play of it, probably, to be quite honest with you. And that's probably as far as I'll go. But, you know, I'm sure it'll be wonderful. I'm sure it'll be very well made because Naughty Dog are Naughty Dog and they don't know how to make bad games, apart from Rings of Power back in 19, whatever the hell. Yeah, you know, it'll be a game. It'll certainly be a game.
Welcome back, everyone. That was a track from Persona 5. Alan insists that we keep playing music from that game until it comes out next year. And we probably will because it's pretty cool music. I think everyone can agree on that. And it fits the theme anyway, since Persona is going to be a PlayStation exclusive next year, which is cool and will no doubt sell PlayStation 4s. All right, so the other big thing that Sony has coming next year, which they recently announced, was a whole bunch of mobile stuff. It looks like they're going to take mobile gaming very seriously now that the Vita is basically dead as far as they're concerned. They're not going to support
life
that
is
one
dead. Anymore,
I don't think. There's still some games coming out for the Vita, the poor old Vita, but they'll be third party. Sony's not going to support it anymore. They've got a lot of mobile stuff to sell. when they had an event recently, they announced a lot of really interesting stuff for mobile coming. A new Hotshots golf game, new Wild Arms game, new Ark the Lad game, and some other stuff. And it looks pretty good. I mean, Sony's obviously got its own mobile business, which it needs to prop up. It's the competitor there rather than the dominant one. It's got to go against Apple, amongst other things. And I guess the best way it sees to do that is to bring some of its great franchises to mobile. And yeah, looks pretty good to me.
Yeah, I just want to have a little bit of a eulogy for the Vita at the moment, because it's the best handheld console that's ever been released, and it just failed so hard. And I'm really, really mad, because it's like a wonderful console. Yeah, apart from the whole Vita being dead thing, I do think that they're making the right decision heading to mobile, because it's a huge install base you can be selling your product to there. And, you know, having the PlayStation brand on it, it's a big, big brand, and it's going to be guaranteed to sell units. So, you know, it's smart. I'm still mad about everything, because I'm genuinely mad about everything. But yeah, it's so sad. It's so sad. Poor Vita.
Firstly, I just want to apologize for, I'm a bit sick, so if my voice sounds a bit gravelly or anything like that, that's why. It's not a, it's, don't blame Alan for
alternatively, just blame me for it, and
it's entirely free my fault. Anyway. How dare I get sick? And I agree with your comments on Vita. I think it's an amazing handheld that I'm really sad to see the way it's gone. But even so, there is with the third-party support, it's got such a great... I feel like it has had a great life despite not selling well and despite everyone kind of just assuming it was dead from the outset.
Yeah, I'll also chime in on the Vita love here. So I think we've got a group of the Vita lovers here. Unfortunately, yeah, it looks like it has been going the way of the Dodo, mostly from Sony's end. But we'll see what they do with their new mobile suite. So I imagine they're going to try and bundle this in with the next Xperia range, I'm sure. They're going to have this big promotion around, you know, the Xperia being the ultimate PlayStation mobile experience, and so forth. So hopefully they don't do anything like make games exclusive to the Xperia handsets, which I don't think they would. But it's looking good with what they're doing there.
I do just also want to point out how ironic it is that the only game console called Life is dead and was dead on arrival. Vita, I miss you. Persona 4 is so good on you. And Wipeout was so good on you. Just, I want you to be good, please.
Yeah, I mean, we can always analyze what happened with the PlayStation Vita another time. I'm sure a lot of people will be doing that in the years ahead anyway. It's a little bit disappointing. I got a lot of playtime out of it. It had, you know, especially in terms of Japanese games, it was particularly good. But, you know, there are obviously reasons it didn't resonate so well with the market. With regards to PlayStation and mobile, one of the things I find interesting is this isn't the first time Sony's actually tried to do the whole PlayStation on mobile thing. It had PS Mobile, like, dedicated or focused handheld. I can't remember what it was called.
It was a PlayStation Go.
Yeah, yes. Go. That's the one.
And it had little slide down thumb pads and so forth.
Yes,
it was
yes.
Also terrible.
Yes, and it didn't do particularly well. And then there was also PlayStation on the tablets, the Sony tablets. There was an actual dedicated PlayStation app, and there was going to be PlayStation games on it and all that kind of stuff. So Sony, this isn't the first time that Sony's tried to bring PlayStation 2 mobile. Fingers crossed it does better for them this time than it did last time, because last time it was a bit of a dud. But, you know, with the right strategy and the right games, it might do better this time. It has certainly has the right games. I find it really interesting that they've kind of pulled into the back catalog of a bunch of games that people have been wanting, you know, sequels or new versions of forever, especially Wild Arms and Ark the Lad and stuff. I find it interesting that they go into that back catalog rather than some of the newest stuff to get the games for the mobile.
I think it's more just that they don't want to split up the install base for these new games. They don't want to pull a Kingdom Hearts and have, like, the main first game of a series. Like, if they had Uncharted 4 and then they released the Chloe story on, you know, mobile phones, people would be like, what, why? I think the fact that they're going back to these old franchises and giving them new life rather than sort of taking away and expecting people to buy new products is actually a really, really clever move on their part.
Yeah, I agree. And that hasn't stopped people from being really angry that we finally get a new Wild Arms game and you put it on mobile. This is a travesty. I've seen a lot of those kind of comments, but as a really huge Wild Arms fan, I think Wild Arms 3 is probably my favorite game of all time. I'm really excited about this new mobile game, and it'd be great to have a new full-blown console game, but as for what it is, I think this is going to be really good, and it's a great way to breathe new life into that franchise, and the same for everything else that they're doing.
Well, I think it's really just comes down to, this is the exact same thing that happened with Bayonetta 2, where people were moaning about how that game was coming out in the Wii U, but the only reason it happened was because it was only going to come out in the Wii U. So, like, do you want more of a, like, do you want more of the things you love, or do you not? And I don't, like, the disconnect there is people are getting mad at it because it exists, and why is it not on a major console? But then if it was going to be on a major console, then how would they do that, and how would they satisfy all the expectations? Whereas on mobile, they can make a game and, you know, not have it be ridiculous budget value, sort of, you know, huge, like Uncharted 4 meets Wild Arms, Nathan Drake meets Rudy, like that sort of stuff. And they can do... they could do a classic Wild Arms style game, and I think that's really, really important, and people just haven't realized that yet, or they're just too stubborn to realize it because they just want a PlayStation 4 Wild Arms or something like that.
And I mean, there's always the potential there that you know, if the game takes off on mobile and is really popular, then Sony might start to realize that, you know, there's a real audience there for Wild Arms, and hey, let's do a new one for PlayStation. It could be that they're dipping into these kind of older franchises for mobile just to test the water, to see what kind of demand there is, and pick out which ones to, you know, resuscitate for main console releases, which is cool. I think it's a good way of doing things. I think that anything that, you know, the test of water for some of these games is a good thing. I'd like to see another Ark the Lad game on console as well, on PlayStation 4. So I'm hoping that everybody gets the PlayStation Mobile 1 version of it, and yeah, Sony sees the potential in the series.
Yeah, I've never played Sakura Wars, but from the announcements, one thing that I'm really excited about for no reason other than the single teaser image that's been shown is... what's it called? Sora to Umi no Ida, our Wars creator. And yeah, the teaser image is just basically a bunch of cute girls standing around doing nothing, and it's probably going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I don't really know much about anything other than Ark the Lad is a name of a game that exists and that is probably going to come out soon. And When that sort of thing, because the PS2 was my baby, when I'm seeing all these PS2 games coming back and I'm seeing things I didn't really know about back in the day, and I knew a lot about PS2 games, it's reassuring that they do actually have this sort of B list of heroes that, you know, it'll be nice to see them return to this market where instead of everything being a AAA, you know, huge like game, that they will have like a couple of Destroy All Humans style games on them. Like on the mobile handheld sort of section of their products, you know, having things like Ark the Lad, which let's be honest, was never really mainstream and was probably quite, you know, I guess niche in that sense, in that it wasn't Final Fantasy X. But yeah, it should be a good year for Sony Mobile.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing I've always liked most about Sony has always been that it has been the publisher that is most willing across a long period of time to support those smaller projects. You know, on the PlayStation 3, we had stuff like Rain and Puppeteer and, you know, all those kind of games that people forget about pretty quickly.
Puppeteer came out on the PS3?
Yeah, Puppeteer.
What? Hold on. Hold a dang second.
Puppeteer was great. Up.
What? I forgot this game existed.
Yeah, exactly. Sony's always backed these kinds of really creative small projects, and it's been really good to see. And, you know, if mobile is the way that Sony can continue doing that, then that's great. As long as they continue doing it with the PS4 as well, which I think, you know, will happen. Most of the games that we're talking about here won't even be announced until next year. You know, who knew about Bound before E3? Kind of nobody. So, you know, on top of everything else we've already seen about Sony for 2017, there is a lot of stuff that will happen that we don't know about yet, which is great. And after our little chat about Wild Arms, we just had to throw on some music from Wild Arms, which is what we've done. Okay, so now let's have a chat with Brendan. That's why he's on the show, to talk about his games and stuff. Take it away, Brendan. Tell us what you're working on at the moment.
Okay, so at the moment I've got two games in the works. A VR game that will be releasing 20th of December. It's called Ready Aim Splat. It's actually a port of an old mobile game I made a couple of years ago. And I just had the opportunity to work with Vive. So I thought I'll have a play around, see if this game works in it. Sort of did, and that sort of has taken the the priority of the last, I guess, 2 months or so of development away from the main game I've been working on, which is called Rotocolor Runners. So my big passion project, and that's the one that hopefully everyone will start seeing a lot more of next year, and it'll go to a lot of big places.
Yeah, I mean, I had a look at the Rotocolor Runners game, and it looks pretty trippy. Where did the idea from that one come from?
The game itself was, it started in an odd place. So last year I booked a booth at PAX at the start of the last year. So that was about April. And then I went to the US for 5 months. And during that time I was working on a different game. And 3 weeks out before PAX, I was at a Beer and Pixels, which is like the local indie dev meetup here in Sydney, where you get to, you know, take your game there, have other people play test it and get feedback. And it was a broken mess. It needed so much work. There was so much wrong with it. The core idea was still good, but there was bugs aplenty, and it just didn't look good. And I thought, shit, you know, PAX comes in 3 weeks. I don't want to turn up there with this, you know, amateur student-like piece of buggy mess. So in a 3 week period, it was a case of, okay, what that will require the least amount of extra work. So the rotoscoped running animation was from this previous game. So I didn't have to do that. And I had some old music from some university projects that I could bring in, and the color concept around the game I could also just reuse. So within 3 weeks, created this new game concept from those pieces, which taken a little life of its own, and it's something I'm really happy to work on. And the main, I think, feeling and the main motivation for it is it was something that I wanted to play when I'd get home after, say, going to a music festival or, you know, going to a gig at night. There's nothing more I like than just to sit on the couch and zone out. Generally on a weekend, I zone out to Rage, which if you don't know, it's like this television program that's been on the ABC here for, I don't know, as long as I can remember. So every weekend you get home and there's always music videos on that you can just sort of sit on the couch and, you know, fall asleep to. So it was trying to evoke a sense of that kind of thing, you know, getting home after a good night out and just wanting to zone out.
Yeah, I love those sorts of games. It's my favorite thing in the world to just sit down and just be like having a, I guess, very much tunnel vision, sort of like what Geometry Wars did, where everything else sort of falls away. I love that sort of thing. It's one of the more underrated sort of genres as well. Like, I feel the chill out game is one of the best things that can happen to you, because there'll be a moment in your life where you'll just be sitting down and be like, you know what? I need to stop. I need to go and I need to just do something for a while that has no relation to anything else, and it's just really, really calming.
Yeah, so that's the type of feeling that we're trying to evoke with the game. And from taking it to some shows, it's always the best reaction when someone has stopped playing it and you just look at their faces and they have that almost blank look and they sort of get it. And that's the kind of thing that keeps you motivated to keep working on it and know that, okay, this isn't just something that I like, this type of game that you do seemingly, you know, it's not challenging. It can be challenging if you want, but it's more or less made to just get lost in a bit. And, you know, going back to one of those games you said, like Rift, one of the first PS3 games, I think, was one of those games for me. Even though it got a little bit challenging, but it was just the music and the visuals work together in a way that you'd sort of just get lost in it.
Yeah, I think looking at the sort of color scheme you've got going on here with that sort of like very vivid greens and blues and reds, it just looks very, very aesthetically pleasing. Something like, you know, not trying to, you know, be biased about it or anything, but it looks like something I would really, really like to play. Like, just in a sense of it joins a sort of like Vib Ribbon sort of aesthetic with more color. And I really like that sort of aesthetic. So, you know, Yeah. It looks cool. I would actually recommend, if you haven't seen this game so far, podcast listeners, you do actually just look up a YouTube video of it just to see what I'm talking about, because it looks really cool. It actually looks really good. And I'm...
Well, thanks.
Yeah. I'm going to be buying this. You sold me on the game. Don't do that. I can't afford it.
Great.
I would second that. It looks really cool. And I guess one thing that I'm a little bit, well, I probably shouldn't be surprised, because it seems made for it, but this, we're seeing, it seems like there's a few good, where am I trying to go with this? Sorry, my mind's just edit me out. My mind's just blanked out. I've been too busy watching these videos, and I've just lost my train of thought completely.
It's worked.
Yeah, perfect. That's what we're going to do. It's like just mind-numbing you in a good way, but you can't think or focus on anything else.
Well, I'm not watching the video at the moment, so I can't be mind-numbed. I've obviously seen it beforehand, and you know, I'm really keen on it as well as a guy that likes rhythm games in general, or kind of games that evoke that aesthetic. So it certainly, you know, sold to me as well. But you know, one of the things that is great as an indie is that you can make these games, and you can, you know, let your own sense of creativity dictate how the game kind of turns out and all of that. But there's the other side, of course, which is that there's no job security. There's no idea where you're going to get your money from, and survive. And game developers do need to eat and sleep. And
no, they don't. They don't. you guys aren't even real.
Contrary to what a lot of gamers would like to think, that we all exist to please them for nothing. You do obviously need to survive. Do you find it a challenge as an indie developer to make ends meet while you're out there creating these kinds of games?
Definitely. So for the last few years, I've had a job on the side, which has kept me sort of just potting along, and I can focus more of my time onto these games. But it is a challenge, especially when you have something that you're trying to then get other people aware of or take around. So after PAX last year, that was very assuring to me that okay, this game is validated now. How do I get this into as many places as possible? So I was looking at festivals to go to, and South by Southwest being a major one that I was always wanting to go to. And I lived in Texas last year for a good half of the year, and then did the same thing again this year. So I went to South by Southwest, and then being based over there, went to a couple of other little conferences. So it was financially straining. I've gotten myself into a little bit of, not a little bit, but, you know, putting all my eggs into that one basket. So every cent I make, I pour back into this game, because I believe in it, and that's what I want to be doing with it. It does get at times, you wonder how can I make it through to next week, and so forth. But things with this game are going well, and during the time in the US, I was introduced to an accelerator program, which I applied for and was accepted into. So as of next week, I should have a bit of funding coming in for the game. So that's going to be a big sigh of relief that I can now focus, you know, a bit more and have a little bit more money to spend on marketing and advertising around the game.
That's good to hear. Congratulations.
No, thank you.
I saw that there was some statistic that I came across recently, which was pretty shocking. Something like the Nintendo 64 across its entire life had 3,500 games produced for it, or something like that. And that's how many games have been produced or released on Steam alone this year. I think it was something like that. Anyway, the number of games that was released on the Nintendo 64 across its entire existence has actually been eclipsed by the number of PC games alone being released in 1 year. That obviously makes it quite difficult to make your game stand out. Obviously, you're in a good spot in that your game actually looks different, which is a nice, it's immediately attention grabbing in that way. but I mean, what do you think an indie can possibly do to kind of make their game stand out when there is just such a glut of games out there to play these days?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges. And with this game in particular, I purposely chose that style because it wasn't pixel art, you know, those kind of things that once something becomes popular and everybody does that, all of a sudden that style is no longer attention grabbing. Fingers crossed in 2 years' time that every second game's a rotoscoped game. But at the moment, there isn't any games that are really being rotoscoped with that aesthetic. So that in itself garnered some attention. And then I guess just getting out there, like going to the conferences and meeting the people is, for me, the best way to spread the word about the game, more so than I could do from sitting at home and, you know, just emailing out and posting on Facebook and so forth.
Really quick question. I just need to do this for my own like little personal happiness.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on the asset flip style game? And how do you recommend that we go about fixing that issue?
Well, you'll have to enlighten me as to what is an asset flip.
Oh, it's the idea of taking a developer sort of assets off the Unity Asset Store and then releasing that on Steam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So basically
unaltered assets,
pre-made assets, and so yes.
Just in relation to how you can market a game, I guess.
Yeah, really, I think it's very difficult to do so, and shooting myself in the foot. That a lot of the assets from Ready Aim Splat, the VR game that I'm going to release next week, are actual asset store assets. They've been modified slightly, but one of the big issues I've had with that is, like, if I put this out, anyone can create a very similar looking game from the same assets. So I think the games that do that don't really have a long lifespan, or people will find that out, and but they won't ever be able to be their thing because those assets are readily available, that it's not unique enough. So
sure. All right, well, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming on, Brendan. It was really good to speak to you, and best of luck with the games.
Thanks for having me.
Do keep us up to date with how they both go, especially, you know, really looking forward to playing them both, really. If you can release the VR one on PlayStation VR, that would be appreciated.
Oh, well, if Sony's listening, then, you know, I'm waiting for my dev kits. That's the only thing that's keeping me back.
No worries. All right. Well, thank you very much again. And thanks to Matt and Alan for, as usual, being on the podcast. We'll catch you next week. You can catch us all on our social medias and all that kind of stuff. And we'll speak next week. Thanks very much.